This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
We have a show full of interviews for you. Tucker Carlson Live happened last night. We have a backstage interview with Tucker, a backstage interview with Nicole Shanahan, Michael Berry. Carol Roth joins us to talk about the interest rate stuff, all that and more coming up on I'm Right.
And that is Jesse Kelly, my friend.
That was the intro last night. Tucker Carlson Live happened in Rosenberg, Texas. I was the guest of honor, the headliner. I guess Tucker was probably the headliner, but it was an amazing time. It was so great being with just the people, just hanging out, talking politics, and sure seemed like they enjoyed it.
It's because the dirty demons who want to hurt you lay awake at night dreaming about it, and they are so mad that they can't, because we are the most armed freaking people on the planet. We have the guns, we have the ammo, and that's why they're mad. These commies are always trying, you see it with every Democrat who talks today, they're always trying to straddle this line, which is really Kamala Harris' specialty given her beginning. But she's what? This state should already, right now, they should already be reorienting the state police, Texas Rangers, to stand as a bulwark between Texans and the federal government that is evil. They already should be doing that. But instead, we have John freaking Cornyn as a senator. We have a primary voter problem, because the reddest states, they are sending the most putrid losers to Washington, D.C. John Thune, John Cornyn, Mitch McConnell, James Lankford, naked Ken Doll Lankford out of Oklahoma. These people are from our reddest states.
Wait, what did you call him?
Naked Ken Doll. Have you ever seen a naked Ken Doll? There's nothing there.
So, no, I'm not bragging. I've never taken off Ken's pants, but so, it's just...
Well, believe me, that's what you're going to find if you ever disrobe James. But the point
I'm
is...
I'm stealing that.
It was a good time. And look, obviously there were laughs to be had, as you can see. There was plenty of serious talk as well.
Do you feel any hope? And if so, why?
Oh, we're going to win. We're going to win. I know that you're afraid. I get afraid. I know you're sad. I'm sad. I love this place, right? I would die for it. It hurts watching these people tear it up. I know it hurts, but I'm here to tell you something. They're more afraid than you are. They're afraid we're going to wake up. They're afraid we're going to get involved. They're afraid we're gonna go to their little fiefdoms of power at the local library or Congress or the school board, wherever it is, and take their power away from them. They're afraid of you speaking the way you wanna speak on social media. They're afraid of the fact that your guns. The demons are more afraid of you than you are of them. The darkness is afraid of the light. The light does not fear the darkness. They should be afraid. I want to make sure I'm very crystal clear about that, and you can clip it all day long, you commie scumbags. Come knock on my freaking door. They should be afraid, because as I mentioned in the beginning, they are wrong. They are evil. What they want is awful for this country. What you want is wonderful and good. We want a country surrounded by family and community, a country led by God and decent people. We want to be led by people who are better than what we have now. And if we stand up, and I see it happening everywhere, we can have that. It is time to stop being afraid like you are and like I am, and it is time to start making them afraid. Good guys don't get afraid. They need to be ones that were afraid of us, and we can do that.
There's a new sheriff in town, ladies and gentlemen. Jesse Kelly, thank you.
Pretty fun. All right, you know what else is fun? Interest rate cuts. We got to cut in the interest rates. That's a good thing, right? Right? I don't know. Let's ask Carol. Joining me now, Carol Roth. I just mentioned her because I need to know what I'm supposed to make of an interest rate cut. Carol, that you have educated us so many times. By the way, everyone, Carol Roth, author of so many books. Her book, You Will Own Nothing, is one you really should be picking up right now. But Carol, you've educated us on finances, on interest rates, on inflation so many times. So I was confused. Inflation is still bad. Why are they cutting interest rates? Because it was always my understanding that interest rates have to go up or stay up to try to keep inflation down. What am I missing, Carol?
What you're missing, Jesse, is that Jerome Powell is unburdened by what has been. And now we are in a rate-cutting environment. Listen, he has a quote-unquote dual mandate. One side, he's trying to keep inflation from getting too high. Obviously, has done a piss-poor job with that. The other side, trying to keep the labor market steady and the economy from cracking. So, theoretically, has kind of done an okay job with that, except for the fact that we know all of the jobs numbers are, you know, made up out of thin air. So I have thought all along that we have had interest rates that are too high and that he has been behind the curve in terms of bringing them down. That being said, when you have out of the blue a 50 basis point cut, it does create a signal. And the signal could be interpreted, particularly given this dual mandate, that he is now less concerned about the growth of inflation, not inflation, because we know cumulatively that's been terrible, but he is less concerned about that, or at least being able to impact that. Because as I said, I don't think his policy has really impacted that. It's come from other factors. But he is very concerned, potentially, even though he told us the economy is great. But, you know, the telegraphing is that he is concerned about what could be happening in the jobs market and what that means for the economy. And if you think about what's been happening with some of the white collar jobs in particular, you know, we have seen more layoffs coming from the tech industry. We've seen Amazon saying everybody has to come back to the office 5 days a week. That's a big leverage shift. It used to be that the labor markets, the jobs, the workers, they could dictate, no, you know, we just feel like coming in, you know, 1 day a week or not at all. Now that leverage has turned. And if you read that press release from Amazon, they also said they're looking to get rid of some managers. So the people who have been propping up the economy while the middle class has been struggling to pay for their food and pay for their rent, you know, now we're seeing more layoffs. We're seeing some potential weakness there. And so I do think that is what is being telegraphed here, even though he told us that he feels like the economy is strong.
Okay, so are we going to see inflation, or do you think, I guess I should ask, do you think we're going to see inflation skyrocket now that they're cutting these rates? If they're cutting them to benefit Amazon or what, whoever they're cutting them for, whatever reason, isn't that going to make inflation worse?
So there are two parts of this question. One is what's going to happen to inflation, and is it related to what the Fed has done? Will we likely see inflation tick up again? Absolutely. And that's because of the government debts and deficits and the fact that we will probably down the line have to monetize those. So do I expect we will see an uptick in inflation at some point? Yes. Do I think that cutting 50 basis points, going from above 5% to 4.75% to 5% is going to unleash inflation? Not in this context. And the context that we have is we have very high interest rates. We had 15 years where people had basically zero or near zero interest rates, where they could take on a lot of debt individually or for their companies. So is there going to be massive demand that is unleashed now that the Fed funds rate is at 4.75 to 5? I don't think that's going to happen. It is above something that we call the neutral rate. The neutral rate, which is theoretical, we don't know exactly what it is, but the neutral rate is that dividing line between tight policy and accommodative policy. And it basically signifies that the Fed's policy does neither. It's neutral, so to speak. So I think we are far enough above that neutral rate to not have that create an impact on inflation. That being said, this is kicking off a cycle. This is not a one and done as far as they're projecting. We're seeing potentially another 0.5% coming in the next two meetings, maybe another 1% next year. So to the extent that they do keep lowering the rates and they go past that neutral rate into accommodative territory, and again, nobody knows what it is. They're just guessing, like with everything else. That's when you can see the inflation reignite. So we're probably not seeing it based on these actions, but it kicks off that chain of future actions that we have to keep our eye on.
Carol, I've only got about a minute left, but I had to ask, do you think this is a political decision? As soon as I saw it, that was my first suspicion, right? But I don't want to make that accusation without hearing from Carol Roth. Was this about the election?
So it's certainly the optics of it are not great to have, you know, right before the election, the last Fed meeting, a 50 basis point cut. That being said, it depends on how you read the signal. And I guarantee you what team you're on is going to be depending on how you read the signal. If you're in Kamala Harris's camp, you're going to say, see, inflation is under control. The Fed feels confident about it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have given us this cut. However, if you are in Trump's camp, you're going to say, well, the only thing the Biden administration has said, the Biden-Harris administration has touted, is that they've done so great with jobs. And oh no, now the Fed is concerned about jobs and they have to start lowering rates in order to preempt the economy for completely turning over. So politically, you could interpret it that either way. And I'm certain that you will see it interpreted both ways.
Yeah, I'm certain you're right. Carol, thank you, ma'am. As always, I appreciate you.
It's a pleasure.
All right. Last night, Tucker Carlson's doing this massive tour, Tucker Carlson Live, with a special guest in every city. Well, last night he came to my area. I live in the Houston area. He did one in Rosenberg, Texas, very close to Houston, and I was his guest last night. So we chatted. We chatted a lot. It's really going to be a good show for you tonight on I'm Right. Before we get to any of that, I want to get to this. I want to talk about your sleep. You see, I slept like a little baby last night. How could I sleep like a little baby when I got home from that big event and I was all jazzed up? Well, I got home and I made myself a little cup of hot chocolate. Cinnamon hot chocolate, actually. Only it was dream powder from Beam. It's delicious. If I didn't tell you that's what it was, you'd never know. It's one of the best cups of hot chocolate I've ever had. But it's all natural stuff, melatonin and things. And as jazzed up as I was, sat there, talked with the wife, little cup of hot chocolate, just went to bed and went to sleep. And then when I woke up this morning, came rocketing out of bed. Worked out this morning, ready to go. You want to sleep like that every night and wake up feeling like that every morning? Go. Up to 40% off. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Go get a bag. You'll always have one. We'll be back. Welcome back to I'm Right, and you know we had the big Tucker Carlson Live event last night. Well, before we were all out on stage together under the lights, we had some time back in the green room. How crazy is that? I was back in a green room. Anyway, we were sitting back there in the green room, and was I eating chips? Yes, I was. But Tucker decided to come back and join me, and we just sat down 5-6 minutes and just kind of shot the breeze about stuff. Not political stuff. Lots of it was stupid stuff, but I think you'll enjoy it. Here it is.
Tucker, do you own an ice maker? A portable ice maker on your counter?
You making fun of me?
No.
I ordered an ice maker last night at Amazon in my hotel room.
Really?
Actually, yes, because...
Are you going to give me any credit for that? Or
how did you know that? You're freaking me out. You're the only... Honestly, how did you know that? I did it for an ice bath because my ice maker is inadequate, so I just ordered a 300-pound ice maker, but I don't know. Unless you have my password, how would you know that?
No, that's mine's a little. It's a little different. Mine's more about the size of a shoebox. It's not wired into anything at the house, but it's a portable ice maker. You see, and we have unlimited ice now in our house, and we've had it for a couple weeks. I'm pretty proud of it.
I don't know how you knew that. I haven't had an ice maker in 22 years. Last time I had an ice maker, I lost control with a scotch and had to quit drinking. We got one of those ones where you like plug your glass into the refrigerator and it fills it up with ice. And I was like, oh, wow, I can just like pour scotch in there. And then, you know, that was it.
The quitting drinking.
Yeah.
I get emails all the time from guys who are struggling to quit drinking. How do I quit drinking? I'm in sales. How do I quit drinking? A lot of their concern seems to be, my life's going to be over. My friends are going to leave me. I can't do my job correctly. Yeah. How's it been quitting drinking?
Well, it's the beginning of life. For me, I mean, for most people who drink in a happy way, it's an addition to their lives. But for people who are harmed by it, it's a nightmare. You'd rather have cancer than alcoholism. And so getting out of it is difficult at first because you have withdrawals that are real. They're more real than you ever imagine or than anyone ever tells you. Once you get past that, you know, your personality fills in the space where the booze was. Like you find your personality getting bigger. Yeah. Actually, alcohol, when you drink too much, not like a normal person like you, but it stunts you. It makes you afraid. It kind of holds you in childhood. You can't become fully yourself when you're drunk all the time. So no, I mean, it's the greatest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, I would imagine your mind works better now than ever before.
Well, I'm 55, so my mind is declining in its acuity, mm-hmm. and I'm just getting muddier and grumpier, and I can't really articulate why I hate everything about modernity. I just do. That's why I don't have a TV, because I don't want to see it. But I can tell you that your emotions become really clear, and you can connect with people. I mean, again, it's very hard to quit drinking. If you keep drinking long enough, you can't quit. But there is a window in my just observation where you start to realize this is a problem, then is the time to quit. And basically, once you quit, you realize everybody had a drug or alcohol problem. There's not a single family where there's not some snarfing addict. You know, there's nothing to be embarrassed about at all.
Do you think it's annoying sometimes to be famous and you can't go anywhere? You can't go into Red Lobster. You can't go to Paris. You can't go anywhere. Is it annoying?
You know, I kind of resolved not to whine about it. I could write a book about it, actually. The only thing I would say without whining, which is whenever, you know, I hear people say, I want to be famous, or people want to be famous. It's like, it really is like asking for shingles or something. Like, I don't understand why anyone would want that. You know, I've lived with it for many years, so I'm used to it, but it's not a life enhancer at all. Anonymity is a life enhancer.
Well, unlimited Red Lobster doesn't hurt. They're coming out of bankruptcy now.
Is that true?
They're coming out of bankruptcy like a phoenix rising from the ashes. There's some new hot CEO. He said he's got them all squared away. I'm pretty excited.
I gave my first speech in 1993 at the Red Lobster in North Little Rock, Arkansas.
Did you give a speech at Red Lobster?
I did. I gave it to Red Lobster, to the Kiwanis Club. Someone in the newsroom at the newspaper where I worked asked if I would give a speech. He called it a lunch speech. So was it the Red Lobster in North Little Rock? And I had some Alaskan snow crab and just killed it.
Yeah. Well, it's Red Lobster. It's the best there is, really. It's the best there is. A tour. I will tell you, I did a very, very mini tour, much smaller than this kind of a thing you were doing. But for the book, I wrote this huge best-selling book. It was amazing. I don't want to brag about it. But
in there.
But I wrote this book. We did a mini tour. It's only like 5-6 stops. It was actually more exhausting than you think it is, because you never stop. You get off a plane, you get on this, you go to this, you go to that. It's tiring.
Yeah, I mean, the problem for me really is just eating. You know what I mean? Which you have to do. And I've quit a lot of poisonous things that I once, cigarettes, alcohol, drug, all that stuff. I'm totally off all that stuff.
Sorry.
But I was having dinner with my cousins last night in Houston, and it's like, let's get dessert. And then I just become disgusting. And so I'm not a womanizer. I really kind of have achieved self-control in a lot of important areas, but dessert, I just can't deal with it. I'm just like a dog. I mean, I had a chocolate mousse cake of some kind with raspberry sauce, and I looked up from its crumbs and felt embarrassment because I realized I had blacked out while eating it. You know what I mean? It's like, so you channel all that celibacy and sadness into dessert. You eat your feelings, and that is hard for me.
No, I'm the worst at that. My lovely wife over there will tell you it's really, no, it's extremely unhealthy.
She's with you. You don't need dessert. My wife left.
No, it's extremely unhealthy. Food will actually govern my meal. Yes. If I have had a good meal, I am so much more pleasant to be around. If I'd strung two together, bad breakfast, bad lunch, just give me a wide berth. I'm not going to be nice for a while.
I find just the opposite. I fast, after breakfast on the day that I, if we've got a show or whatever, I can't eat. And the longer I go without eating, the happier I am. I feel so oppressed by the chocolate mousse cake and the raspberry sauce and the fries that preceded it and the mushroom ravioli that came before that and the mushroom soup.
Mother of God.
And the Melba toast. I know. It was an orgy. It was filthy.
That's a lot.
Scooted off the vomitorium after and then just did it again.
Yeah. You know what? I think we should wrap there. That's a lot of pain. That's a lot of pain. Tucker Carlson, everybody. Thank you.
Jesse, thank you.
So that was me and Tucker backstage. Now, Nicole Shanahan was there last night. RFK Jr.'s former running mate? Does she count as former running mate? Anyway, she's out there campaigning right now on behalf of Donald Trump. She was there last night. And before she got to the stage, had a few minutes with her backstage, and we're going to play you that interview in its entirety in a moment. Before we do that, let's get you all fixed up with the new cell phone service, because I want to save you money. It's not only the morals of Pure Talk. That's not the only reason I have them. That's the main reason I have them. Pure Talk loves this country. Verizon hates it. AT&T hates it. T-Mobile hates it. These are evil companies. We shouldn't support them with our money. But Pure Talk also saves you a pile of money. Our cell phone bill, when we had T-Mobile, what was it? I think it was $148 a month or something insane like that. When we switched to Pure Talk, cut it in half. I pay half of what I used to now. That sound good? You can keep your phone. You don't have to switch phones. Keep your number. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. It's cake, I promise. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
I am so happy to be here, and I have a special gift from the Maha peoples to the MAGA peoples.
Oh! Can you read what that says?
Make America healthy again, and check out the back.
Unity.
Unity.
How about that? It was a cool moment. It was great watching those two on stage. Before those two got onto the stage, Nicole Shanahan joined me backstage in the green room. We had a little sit down. Speaking of making America healthy again, this is obviously a crusade she's on, in a good crusade. Anyway, sat down with Nicole for about 10 minutes, and here's that interview in its entirety.
Nicole, you, RFK Jr., Bobby, you have chosen to endorse Donald Trump. Everyone's thrilled about that. What thrills me most is speaking about health and speaking about big pharma.
Yep.
Because this is something that when I look at the pilled out levels of America, it floors me. And we don't talk enough about it, about how that's, when you walk in the doctor's office, he's just waiting to write you a prescription for something. Talk about it.
Yeah, I had an experience where I met with a former EMT, and he said what changed his life was going into homes across the country and seeing kitchens full of prescription pills and nothing in the refrigerator, empty refrigerators. That's the state of this country right now. Empty refrigerators and pill bottles. That's sad. Breaks my heart. We can't live like this in this country anymore. We deserve better.
Nicole, why is it this way here and not this way? And everyone knows I'm the ultimate ugly American. I like my country best, but it's not. Every time you turn on the television, if you go overseas, every other commercial is not big pharma commercial. We don't watch a ton of TV, but if it's ever on in the background, it's every commercial. It wasn't even like that when I was a kid. I'm not ancient. I'm 43. How and when did this happen?
Yeah, and it's also being glorified as well, that the American healthcare system has these shiny hospitals that a child is exiting after their leukemia treatment. And it's glorified. And, it is great. Yes, if we can recover children, of course, we want that ability, but why do we have so many sick people in this country? I just spoke to the EPA this morning. There's a big group of people, scientists out there, for 10 years now, they've been trying to get them to stop glyphosate spraying in harvest. So, you know, farmers will use glyphosate throughout the crop cycle, but a practice that we do here in the United States that's banned in Europe is pre-harvest desiccation, which is spraying the crops to kill the weeds, to loosen the crops so that they're easier to harvest. But the problem with that is the residues. The glyphosate residues don't have time to dry out and dissipate. So we're eating heavy loads of glyphosate. And we're, you know, chatting with the EPA this morning. I zoomed in. Mm-hmm. I was virtual, but the rest of the group was there in person. And for 10 years, this group has been telling the EPA about this. And for 10 years, the EPA has failed to act. This is one of the easiest things we could change. Very easy. And they refuse to act.
Don't you hate Zoom? I can't do it. I know we all Zoom everything now, but it's so impersonal. I'm talking over people the whole time. I despise it.
Well, you know, there's Zoom etiquette. I could coach you on that. but, you know, it's I'm a mom, and Zoom's been great for being able to be at home and also run a business. I'm an active venture investor. And, mm-hmm. and I think there's a lot of good to Zoom, but I think you're right. Getting out there and having that personal connection is so important, which is why the lockdowns devastated the human experience so much. People got sick, not because of COVID, but from the spiritual dissecting that we've had. Humans need each other. They also need nature. They need to walk barefoot outside. They need to touch grass. And what they did to humans during the pandemic, I mean, no amount of Zoom could make up for. And you're right. It is. There's, you know, Zoom serves a purpose. It's a tool. But to be the exclusive way of communicating, which is how it got so big, was during the pandemic. It's not good.
No, it didn't work out for Jeffrey Toobin. So Speaking of nature and sunshine and things like that, you mentioned COVID and you keep coming back to this. I'm shocked at what happened to our medical institutions. We actually have a wonderful doctor about 10 feet away from us who was scorned for treating patients with things that worked for patients. Mm-hmm. If you were a doctor who spoke out against things, against the insanity of it, you were shunned. They tried to ruin your career. In many cases, they did ruin your career. Yeah. If you were a doctor who towed the party line, get your 19th booster shot, sorry about your stroke, then you were still making money to this day, and we've never had a reckoning. Are we ever going to get one?
You know, I think that there is a lot going on right now that is very optimistic, in my opinion, about being able to address these very egregious harms, the censorship of qualified experts, the deplatforming of qualified experts, some of the top experts in the world. And this is not like Andy Wakefield, who was, you know, 25 years ago canceled for publishing a paper on MMR and autism and gut inflammation. You know, he was one of like three doctors that were canceled. COVID-19 was a mass canceling of doctors. And there were tens of thousands of qualified voices that were silenced. Just the Great Barrington Declaration by Jay Bhattacharya. I mean, he's had tens of thousands of experts sign that document. And, you know, Washington Post will say, I was interviewed by a journalist, asked me, why would you align yourself with that? And I was like, what do you mean by that? You're like, that is a group of very important experts that are providing a dissenting opinion. Dissenting opinions are part of American culture. Our Supreme Court, we have dissenting opinions. This is very, very important to hear those dissenting opinions in light of the dominating opinion. Even if it is not the one that the government chooses, we still have to hear them.
Amen. Nicole, it's a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Such a pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure.
That was me and Nicole, or Nicole and me. Nicole and I? I don't know, I went to community college. Either way, Michael Berry, my mentor, people ask me how I got into this business. I've only been doing media for 6 years. I had a very normal life before this. Well, Michael Berry is really the main reason I got into this business. He's my mentor. He's been doing it a while. He's the one who pushed me to try it. And he was at the event last night, and he was backstage, and we did a long sit down, he and I, where I thought I was going to interview him, but he ended up interviewing me. Anyway, we'll play you that next. All right. As I said, going into the break, Michael Berry is my mentor. He's the one who pushed me to do this. I got to know him back when I was selling RVs. He's pushing me. Go for a media career. You could do great at it. So I owe a lot to Michael Berry. I always have. I always will bring him up as somebody who mentored me and still does. When I have questions, concerns, when I need advice, he's the one I call. And he's also a total jerk. I took a picture with Michael, me, Nicole Shanahan, and Tucker last night. Michael very rudely cut my head off in the picture. It's not very nice, but he's not very nice. I sat down to interview him. He ended up deciding he wanted to run things, and he interviewed me, and here we were.
Do you own an ice maker?
I do. I own an ice maker. I'm not sure how you heard about it. I've been fairly tight-lipped about it, but...
No, serious question. Do you own an ice maker?
I do.
I don't think people know how much money you make.
Well, look, it was $45.
Was it?
It was $45.
I don't believe you.
No, it was.
Your wife is here, and I don't believe you.
Well, she's the one who bought it.
Did she?
She's actually the one who bought it. She's been really upset about how much public credit I've taken for the fact that it was her idea, and she purchased it.
Okay.
I did pay the extra $4.99 for expedited shipping, so I don't want to rub that in anyone's face.
Yeah, I don't really like to be interviewed, so I thought I'd interview you.
Well, clearly you're going to take command.
So people want to know, what does Jesse Kelly do when he gets home every night from the show, and he's had a long day, right? Sitting in an air-conditioned office all day and doing his show.
It's
and
brutal.
Having people tell him how great he is. What is it? Do you have a drink when you come home?
Not as much anymore, actually. Yeah. I used to...
Don't try to be Tucker Carlson. Be honest.
My routine used to be... I'm being honest, if you would stop interrupting. My routine used to be... Remember, I get home because my show is at night.
Yeah.
So by the time I get home... She's getting ready to go to bed. My wife's getting ready to go to bed. Yeah. The boys are getting ready to go to bed. The house is winding down because it's an evening show. I don't get home and have dinner. It used to be more of go have a glass of bourbon or two. I am worried about my blood pressure because high blood pressure runs in my family. And it was starting to run a little high. Not like anything concerning, but a little high. So I had to basically cut a lot of that out.
When
so
you have that problem like now. Giraffes have, you have to push that blood so far.
It's not like giraffes. It has nothing to do with
eight?
Giraffes.
How
it
tall are you?
I'm 6'8".
Yeah.
I'm
well, then why are you wearing high heel boots if you're 6'8"? You don't need to wear high heel boots. You're already 6'8". What are you, 6'11" now?
Well, I don't need an ice maker either,
awkward.
But I have one now.
That's a good point.
It's not your
That's
problem, is it? I have more ice than you have. You're my mentor. You're Michael Berry. You had all this success. I have more ice than you do, and you don't have to live with that.
Did you ever think that you would be hanging out backstage with Tucker Carlson and him telling all your friends, including your mom, how great you are?
Yeah, I always figured. Yeah. I always figured whenever I was selling RVs.
Yeah, you figured.
I figured, you know, when I was in the Marines, when I was in the sand, I would sit there and say to myself, you're going to be a huge star one day.
I was serious. You're in the national conversation with five people. No, it's serious. Like, I'm being dead serious. It's cool as hell. It's fun for me to watch.
In all seriousness, it's like I'm watching it too. Mm-hmm. My wife and I, Av and I, were talking about it on the way in. You know, we're at this big Tucker Carlson event, and we're all backstage in this green room.
Event, but you are the superstar.
When we pulled in, it was Tucker's face on there, and then my face is on the billboard.
Yep.
And we pulled over and took a picture of it.
Yeah.
That's really weird. It's very weird. Right? This is weird to me. I don't have green rooms and stuff. I come from a construction family, which I'm very proud of. But I don't have green rooms. You don't have events. You don't have people wanting to take pictures with you. It's like I'm watching it too. People don't believe me when I say that, but it is. It's weird. Like I'll come home and I'll talk about it.
I will tell you, and people have asked me, you've had a meteoric rise. And I tell people that the reason for that is authenticity. There are a lot of people that were an FM DJ, they were a TV personality, and nothing against them. They're very good at presenting on TV, although I think you're phenomenal. But I think the thing that makes you special is there's an authenticity. You're a real person. People can imagine you. You're one of them. You know, in poor towns, the preacher would wear the nicest suit and have the nicest car. You're a guy who came from everyday people and launched. And I think that's really awesome for people. You know, you went in the Marines. Who did that, right? You've had this experience. You sold RVs and you embrace that, right? You love Long John Silver's. I love that. I mean, you love Red Lobster. I love that. And I think people, I think that resonates with people.
Well, about what we do, that you told me this when you were mentoring me and teaching me how to do this.
We were.
About how intimate radio is. A radio or podcasting, whichever one you want to put it. Every radio show is podcasted now. But when it's the spoken word, when it's audio, again, this is what you taught me. You do it with people. People watch me do TV because I have a TV show where everyone's watching this right now on the first.
Right.
It's a different way to consume media. You sit back and you watch it. When it comes to radio, I am in your car with you. I am making dinner with you. I am working out with you. I am at your job. I'm sitting at your desk. And because you're doing your day with me. Whereas when people are watching this right now on the Amazing First TV, you are sitting in front of your iPad or your television or wherever you're watching, and you're watching it. But you can't lie if you're on the radio for 3 hours a day. If you are fake, people are not stupid. They will sniff it out in a heartbeat.
Yep.
They will smell it in a million miles. I can't pretend to be educated. I'm not. I can't pretend to not like, you know, things like Waffle House and Red Lobster. That's who I am. It's what I love. It's what I enjoy.
Yep.
If I pretended, people would know. So you might as well not bother.
Our CEO, who we both work at a company that he's the umbrella, yep, Bob Pittman, who is the founder of MTV, says that we are your companion, at least on your radio side, your TV side. And I love watching the show because I get to see you in kind of a different way, because now you get to use the visuals and all that. You don't have to tell the story quite so much. Now you can emote in a way you can't on the radio. You can show your reaction to a video. And I think I got to tell you, and I'm not blowing you up because I'll you know, knock you around as well. You know this, but I can't believe, and I'm not good at TV. I've never been good at TV. That's why I don't do it. You are so good on TV, not having come up through the ranks, not having been coached, not having been, and that to me is one of the anomalies about you. I've never seen somebody that's so good on TV on day one. It's incredible.
Well, I like talking with my hands when I talk to people, yep, and I like expressing things. And I appreciate the radio aspect where you have to describe it, but I like being able to make a facial expression like right now. I like being able to roll my eyes or laugh or or grab my head or I enjoy, I don't know, does that sound lame? It almost sounds theatrical, but I enjoy that part of it. I think it helps bring everything alive.
Well, that's the laugh track, right? We're seeing how you're reacting. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. What worries you most about the future of this country right now?
Things are so poisoned at the top. It's so corrupt. It's so criminal at the top. We already know that. We get that. You and I talk about this on our shows every single day, all day long, how corrupt they are, how evil, how poisonous it is. That's a given. All right, well, that's the life we've been given. That's the government we've been given. What concerns me is the number of people who will wake up in time to stop it, because we completely have the power to stop this. We really do. People don't think so because you feel surrounded and you watch the news and it's just problems here and problems there and problems there. We really do. We have the power. We have the numbers. People do not know this. I'll probably end up saying this tonight, but they're afraid of us. The government is deathly afraid of us. You think you're afraid of them. They are afraid. The media is afraid. They are afraid the people will wake up and rise up and reject them. And we have the power to do that if we will wake up in time. And I'm also concerned, to be honest, I know this is going to get a little dark. I'm concerned about a terrible event gutting people and holding the movement back. Now, that terrible event, everyone knows what I'm talking about right off the bat. I'm worried they're going to kill Donald Trump. I believe they will. Because corrupt evil systems kill people who challenge them. That's just the history of the world. But let's say it's not that. What if it's just a loss in November? Everyone thinks Kamala Harris is going to lose. She's a moron. No one will vote for that. Everyone's done with it. What if she does win? What if it's cheating? What if it's not? What if, who knows? Are all the people who are energized and rising up right now. Yeah, we're all going to be drowning our sorrows that night. But are people just going to say, screw it, and walk away? Because if that happens, we're done. If that happens, we have a dark, ugly, evil future ahead of us. If people stay involved, if people get involved, we do not. It's just that simple. We will not be determined by Trump or one race or the House or the Senate. Do the people continue to rise up and get involved? If they do, we're fine. If not, we're screwed. That's what worries me. Because I don't know which way that's going to go. I don't know. Historically, sometimes they do rise up. And sometimes they just go meekly into the gulags.
You and I talk off air often about things, and it's almost never politics. It's interesting for me because I follow you on Twitter. You write things, and I think that's exactly how I feel, and we haven't talked about that. He just put it better than I would. And it's shocking to me. I've literally never seen an opinion of yours that you posted, and that your opinions are out there. And I go, gosh, I agree with him 100% of the time. But people will say, what do you and Jesse talk about? And I'll say, we talk about our families. We talk about what's going on in our personal lives. We talk about which part of our body's falling apart because we're not as young as we used to be. When you talk about being a father, which you don't talk as much about that on the air as I think you should, how are you different as a father talking to the nation every night about, and every day, about what's going on in this country? Because I'm different, I know. How are you different?
I don't think I am. And if anything, it can come off. I know it can. My wife, she'll say to me, it can come off as very direct and harsh. But my boys are at the age where, well, even when they were younger, I just don't sugarcoat things for them. If they came home one day in class or from school and their teacher told them that FDR was the greatest president ever, I will not dance around it. Your teacher's an idiot, and FDR was a scumbag communist, and I can't stand him. So it doesn't mean you get in trouble in class. You keep your mouth shut, but your teacher doesn't know what the heck they're talking about. And I don't know that that's the right way. I certainly don't think I'm father of the year, but I will tell you, my sons, not your sons, you're the same way, but my sons are very much prepared for when they hear crap. They can sniff it a mile away now, because of how we've raised them, how we've been. There's a Disney movie coming out. I don't know what the stupid thing is. Some robots running through the forest with animals and crap. Everyone's probably seen the advertisers anywhere. And immediately, we were at the movies. I forget what we were going to see. My youngest, he's not even the political one. My oldest is. He looks at me and he says, you know, that's just going to be a bunch of climate change propaganda. That's my boy, right? And if you teach them how to sniff out all the garbage, when you're in a system of lies, when everything on the TV is a lie and every movie's a propaganda piece and everything's a lie, if you teach them how to see that instead of what every individual story is, then they pick up on it so fast. It makes me so proud when they pick up on it before I don't have to say anything, because I know I'm prepping them to enter a world of lies. That's the world we live in now.
And if parents had been parents, then the young voters, especially today, wouldn't be making the mistakes they were.
Well, we were there. There was this lull that is a very understandable lull with the previous generation or two. They had been raised in a normal country and they'd been raised by normal parents. And the rot and corruption and evil at the top was not broadcast every day on the news. It wasn't nearly as evident. You had little glimpses of this and that. It wasn't breaking news that LBJ was a corrupt piece of trash who started an entire war over. These things are known. It's not like they were completely like lost, but you didn't know that you had to teach your kids to wake up and be activists. You didn't know that. You can't raise your kids. Well, we don't talk politics. You can't do that. It's not an option anymore. If you send your kids out there, they're going to get eaten alive by the wolves in the society like that. You better prep them now. But that generation didn't know, because they weren't trying to blow the Republican nominee's head off and chop kids' penises off when my parents were raising us. It just didn't work out that way.
So Saturday, we're chatting, and I said, come over. I smoke cigars. You don't. But let's have some bourbons and catch up on things and celebrate and enjoy some good fellowship. And you said, I'm at a cross-country track meet out in the sun while everybody else in America is watching college football and enjoying themselves. But I got to tell you, I think those experiences connect us to to real Americans. Because you and I both know that Kamala Harris is not a real American. Her husband is not a real American. Joe Biden's not a real. This is not, they do not live the lives that real Americans live. You need to be at that cross-country meet, which is why you're there. You need to be out there in the sun. You need to be spending 4 hours to watch your kid run for 10 minutes. And I think that helps us understand what people are going through, because you've been hanging out with Tucker Carlson tonight. It's very easy to get alienated from the people sitting in those seats and the lives they're leading and to communicate with those people. And I think that's an important part of what we do that we tend to take for granted.
We do take it for granted. And as soon as you start, as soon as you start making some money, right, you get the successful enough in media, you're going to start making good money. People aren't naive. They know you're making good money. You can quickly price yourself out of experiencing what other people experience at all. No, I'm not going to cross. Cross country is an hour and a half away.
Right.
I want to sleep in. You know what? We don't have a nanny, but send the nanny with the kids. And you can use your money to price yourself out of the way everyday people live. So you're never in the grocery store sticker shocked at the price of beef. You're never at a cross country tournament rotting in miserable heat with all the other parents because your kid doesn't race again for another 2 hours. If you do that, you're done. If you lose connection to people, you're done.
That was me. That was Michael. It was a good time. Now, lighten the mood's always a good time, isn't it? We have a great one for you. Next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And we all know Dome likes to change accents depending on which crowd she's in. I really, really enjoyed the new Latina Dome.
I love you back. I love you back. I love you back.
I love you, mommy. Anyway, I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.